The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Loki. Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki Season 2 is...
marvelous.
Great.
And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki Season 2. Now streaming only on Disney Plus.
You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by Habs Eyes on the Prize.com.
Attention, sports fans. Are you a fan of an NFL team? Would you love to attend your favorite team's Week 1 game? Well, you're in luck. Fans First Sports Network is giving away 4 free tickets to the Week 1 NFL game of your choice, up to $5,000. The rules to enter are simple. Step 1, go to contest.fansfirstsports.com. That's contest.fansfirstsports.com, and fill out the appropriate information. Step 2, find us on Facebook, Fans First Sports Network, and like our page. That's it. Once you've done that, you've officially been registered to win the 4 free tickets to any Week 1 NFL game. What are you waiting for? Go enter for your shot at seeing your favorite team in action. Contest ends on September 4th.
Hello and welcome to one of the last episodes of the Top 25 Under 25. It's number 3. It is Kirby Dack. And I'm joined, of course, by Anton Rossegård. Anton, yes. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And in a first-time thing, we are joined by an old managing editor for Eyes on the Prize. And I know you're all going to say Mark has been on the podcast before, but it's not Mark. It's Andrew Berkshire, host of Game Over Montreal. It's not really Game Over here. It's Game On. Are you ready for that?
Always ready, my friend. Always. And it's awesome to finally be on the show.
Yeah, I think we heard you a little bit last year because Mark was recording at your place. So
yes, that's
right. Came some notes or theater whispers, as we say in Swedish, into the podcast. You're obviously Game Over Montreal. Are you doing anything spectacular this summer with it, or are you focusing more on the season?
Well, I also manage the Game Over brand for SDPN, so we're in every Canadian market for hockey. We're not expanding this year, but we'll probably bring back our international shows covering the World Juniors, things like that. We might cover World Championships this year, too. It depends on what we can do, what our staff allows us to do, essentially, like how big our staff is at that point. Lots of stuff to do with that. We have Game Over Pro Wrestling that goes after WWE main events. We're trying that out to do more consistently this year. So that will be fun as well. We might expand into like AEW, that kind of stuff. But for the most part, my summers are preparing for next season, booking guests for 82 different spots. And then lots of chatting with Mark Dumont, who's my co-host on the show, about what we want to do specifically with Game Over Montreal and preparing the other hosts in other markets.
Yeah, and, you know, World Juniors, down the road from where I live, we can even record together, Andrew, if you come over.
Hey, that would be fun. I don't know if I can manage that, just because the young family that I have leaving over Christmas, I think would get me in a little bit of trouble.
Just a little bit?
It would be really fun. The thing is, if I could afford to bring the whole family, now that I would love to do. And then our families could meet Patrick and we could have some dinners. That'd be really fun.
Yeah,
but, that's probably a couple years away, I'd say.
Well, that's good because I think we already booked Hotel Bexel here for the World Juniors. We're not here to talk about the World Juniors. He's shown in World Juniors a couple of years ago, though. We're here to talk about Kirby Dack. His highest vote was actually by me at number 2. And I can say that I was twisting and turning about where to put Cole Caulfield and Kirby Dack. And in the end, I went with the center higher. I know a 50-point goal scorer is also very tough to get on the trade market. So, but in the end, it was an even race for me, more or less. And in the end, it came down to a coin toss. Lowest vote was number 7 with Jared and Matt.
Yes.
I think that.
Wow.
which I think is a little bit low, but they're not here, so I'm not gonna.
No, but actually, it's kind of fun if we count us four regulars on the podcast. It's Jared, Matt, you, and me. And me, Jared, and Matt were all the three low votes on Doc, and you were the high votes. So it's perfect.
It's perfect in that regard. So why did you vote rank him that low then?
Well, I ranked him at fifth because I as much as I liked Kirby Doc's first season with the Canadians, I see higher upside in some of the other players on the team and in the organization. I had I was also debating whether to put him maybe at fourth or ending up putting him even at third place, but I went with a couple of other players, Kaden Gooley at three and Juraj Slafkovský at four, and I see Kirby Doc as a clear, you know, the number two guy to Nick Suzuki's number one, which I hope that he can really become a good second pivot, David Krejci kind of guy, as he was in Boston for many years. We'll see if he can live up to those expectations. Those are pretty lofty. But it was very promising to see how quickly he fit in with the Canadiens organization after having a tough time during the latter 2 years in Chicago.
Andrew, I don't know if you did actually vote and used your acronym Jerkshire as name or if you but if you did just a random top 10, where would you
put that? I did not vote with my own name or any nicknames. Top 10. I mean, I wish I had put some thought into it. I think I still might have Nick Suzuki at number one just because of his versatility and what he's shown. I think the trouble with Nick Suzuki is he's clearly not one of those guys who can play top minutes and run a line on his own without any support, like a superstar center, right? He's a guy who needs the right line mates to play those top line minutes and be successful at the same time. And the Canadians currently don't have that. So I think the top echelon here is lower than where a lot of people want to put the Canadians. They still need some major talent at the top end to finish their rebuild here. But I would have Suzuki, probably Caulfield. You just can't find guys with 50 goal potential very easily. After that, I would probably have Kirby Doc. Number four, Reinbacher. Five, Hutson. And the only reason why I have Hutson below Reinbacher is because Reinbacher will get more opportunities to continue to develop and be the player that he can max out at than Hutson will. Hutson will have to be perfect everywhere along his development curve in order to maintain his status and continue developing as a impact NHLer. And after that, I don't want to even rank the next five, but it's got to be a combination of, you know, Gooley, Slafkovský. I'm trying to think of like other prospects in the system at this point. I'm just kind of blanking because
Alex
it's
Newhook,
the middle of the
maybe?
Summer. Is Newhook under 25? I guess so. Just barely.
He's the same age as Cole Caulfield. So he's only 22.
You're right. Okay. So I think he has to be in that conversation as well, just by the fact that he's already an NHLer, right?
Yeah.
So you'd have to put him ahead of guys, even like Justin Barron, who's in the NHL, but we don't know what his potential is going to be. I think Newhook's had a longer NHL career so far than Barron. So those kinds of players anyway, the Canadians have so many players in that range that I feel like 5 to even 15, you're going to have, I don't know how your votes went, but it seems to me there'd be wild variation, right? Because there's some people who would really value lesser knowns like Joshua Waugh, and there's some people who more value Alex Newhook, who's already proved that he can play in the NHL. Riley Kidney, a guy who has incredible offense, who took a way bigger step last year than people believe from his numbers. If you talk to actual scouts, he went from a perimeter player who just scored in junior ways because he could to a player who now drives the net and creates offense in a sustainable way that can translate to the NHL. He's a good prospect. It's tough in that 6 through 15 area, I think.
Yeah, I can tell you it was also very tough from the 15 to the 30 area.
I can imagine. Hey, I didn't even mention Adam Engstrom, who you know, I've had a high opinion of, but after seeing him at development camp, my goodness, what I would sacrifice to be able to skate like Adam Ekstrom and his decision making. I know I'm speaking you saying to that about you, certain, Patrick. You love it,
Jacob De La Rose, right?
You know, Jacob De La Rose, great skater. Yeah. Not he doesn't have the brain that Engstrom has, though. I don't think.
No.
Just to reiterate about what you said, Andrew. We had one staff member that ranked Joshua Roy at fourth. We had one staff member that had David Reinbacher at fourth. We had three staff members that had Lane Hudson at three. So it was really tough to distinguish between those spaces, just as you said.
Yeah, it's a very deep system.
The thing is also that you got Dark coming in with an average of 3.9. He's the clear number three on the list, and he is ranked number four in the rankings. He's closer to number five at 5.1 than he is at number two, which is 1.9. So there is, you know, he's in a layer of his own on that cake that is the Canadian system. We got him through a trade that included draft picks, and I'm not going to mention who they become and which other teams that took it. But also Alexander Romanov, are you happy with that trade looking back?
Oh, absolutely. I love that trade. I think there are people who can look at Frank Nazar, who the Blackhawks took, and think like, oh, maybe he'll be better than Doc. But I can't even look at it that way, because to me, that happened so quickly that yes, that asset did belong to the Montreal Canadiens. But what they essentially did is a three-way trade where they gave up Alex Romanov and I believe a third round pick. And got Kirby Doc. And that's just not a lot to sacrifice for a player of Kirby Doc's stature. So I don't even like the draft pick in that specific trade doesn't even enter the conversation for me. It did move, but like not in any real way, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, we've seen Romanov still play very well in Islanders, but it's another system. Maybe suiting him a little bit better as a defensive-minded defender and where he gets to shine on that. I always thought that Montreal overvalued his offensive output and fans, especially after World Juniors, whereas that was not how he was used in CSKA. Looking, though, Dach this season, 58 games injured as well, 38 points, 14 goals, 24 assists. I only remember the goal against Chicago in Chicago. So that's what I can say, but you following the Canadians as close as you are and having a podcast after every game, what's your opinion on Kirby Doc this season?
For Kirby Doc, I see his season went in several stages. At the beginning of the season, he looked good. Couldn't win a faceoff, of course. That's still a skill that he's struggling with. But he looked good. The production was not great. He was kind of the only guy outside of the top line at the time, which was Suzuki, Caulfield, and whoever. He was the only guy who was really scoring, but there was a lot of questions about whether or not he could play center because of the faceoff thing. So he gets bumped onto the top line. All of a sudden he goes from looking good, looking comfortable to, oh, okay, he can make plays for these guys. Now he's on the top power play unit. He's looking like he can produce a decent amount of points, but he doesn't really score much. Then you got the last third of the season that he played where all of a sudden, he's got that scoring touch. He's putting pucks into the net, going to the tough spots, using his body. It's like this constant progression throughout last season for Kirby Doc, all of which were kind of beyond the initial expectations, where people thought that he was going to be a bit of a project, really struggled in Chicago. You know, Chicago fans all season or all off season last year were talking to me, whether in public or in DMs, like, listen, this guy is terrible. You're going to hate him. He's going to be super frustrating. But every step along the way, I thought Kirby Doc continued to step up, whether he was playing with poor line mates or good line mates. He was driving play. He was creating scoring opportunities. His defensive numbers on a team that can't defend are actually spectacular. Now, he wasn't put in a position to face top-end competition, really, outside of when he was with Suzuki and Caulfield. And, you know, then you're playing with the best players. You can't really complain. But overall, I look at it as a guy who's developing pretty much perfectly for the role that you guys had mentioned, which is that second pivot, you know, David Krejci mold. I think he's got a more physicality to him than Krejci does. His puck protection, I would put in the top 10 of the NHL. Like, he's just so strong along the boards, and he's only going to get stronger. And I love that his attitude after the season was basically, this is just the first step for him. There's more work to do. Now, at his age, it's unlikely that we're going to see like a huge push upwards, but because his development was stalled in Chicago, we could probably see another pretty solid step for Kirby Dach. And I expect him to be a 55 to 65 point player for the next 10-ish years. That's the kind of player that I expect him to be, with maybe not your top end penalty killer or your top end defensive matchup player, but a guy who consistently gets above average defensive results against the middle of teams' lineups.
In order to see that change and development, really, you mentioned, obviously, and we all mention it when we see the stats and when we see the games, the face-off. Is that included, or do you think he can become that pivot and maybe have a good centerman winger to work with if you take someone like, just out top of my head because I'm a Euro guy, Kapanen, that is pretty good in the face-off circle, already doing it in a pro league against men, and maybe helping Dach out and have him as a second face-off guy rather than a first in traditional center setting?
Yeah, I don't know if they're so worried about it that they're going to have him not take face-offs. I think they give him time. I think we saw them give Suzuki time. It's been a slow roll for him for face-offs. This year, he started out really, really well, and I think he still finished the year like at or just below 50% on face-offs. But, you know, he's taking the most important face-offs of every single game, 82 games. The guy doesn't miss games, every situation. So I think what we'll probably see is Dach will play wing in those situations. Very unlikely that he'll be the first person lining up for a face-off where the face-off is really important. That'll limit his versatility in some situations, right? Like if you have a key penalty kill, he probably isn't going to start off the penalty kill at center, because that's a situation that really a one face-off matters a lot. So you don't want to go from a 51% chance to a 40% chance or a 39% chance. But overall, I think face-offs, as far as their importance, are pretty overrated. I kind of categorize them as a loose puck recovery, which is something that can happen all over the ice and happens, I think, around 1,000 times per game, or maybe slightly more. So compare that to the number of face-offs, and like, it's just one kind of puck battle, and there are thousands of puck battles every game. So even if you're giving up that first couple seconds of possession, you can win that puck back pretty quickly. And if you consistently do that and you're still driving play, still scoring, your numbers are still good, I don't think a modern coach would care too much about that. It's just those specific situations.
Do you see him falling down the lineup? We got, as I mentioned, Kapanen, we got Beck, we got other centers coming up as well. Can you see Dach falling from, I shouldn't say grace, but, you know, maybe falling down the lineup, or do you think he's solidified into that number two spot already?
Yeah, I mean, I saw two situations where the Canadiens could drop Dach down the lineup. One was if they acquired Pierre-Luc Dubois in the offseason, if they had won that trade somehow, which I think people would not be very happy about considering how much LA spent on him. Winnipeg did well to manipulate that situation to their power, because they had almost no leverage whatsoever. So they got a really good trade out of that. I think most people are glad the Canadiens didn't bite. That would probably drop Dach down temporarily, at least. I know Dubois isn't that much older than Dach. I think he's like 1 or 2 years older. So it's not like Dach has this huge runway to become better than Dubois, but I don't think he's got as far to go to be better than Dubois than a lot of people do. They're actually very comparable last season in a lot of different ways, but Dach's better defensively. So there's that. That could have bumped him down. The other is if the Canadiens draft a franchise-level center, a Connor Bedard type, someone in the next draft here, that could bump him down. But internally right now, at the moment, I think there's a very, very small chance that any center in the system has the tools and the brains and the physical stature to bump Kirby Doc down the lineup. I think he just has this combination that's really enticing for the entire organization. And because he's very different in size and the way he creates to Nick Suzuki, that also makes him an ideal number two, because you're going to have one line that comes at you one way, which is that Caulfield Suzuki shark situation where they're trying to pounce on mistakes. And then you have the next line, as soon as you're used to that, that plays a totally different style of offensive hockey, where it's all hard nose to the boards, take the puck off the wall, drive the net, that kind of stuff. And that just creates an ideal scenario for team building as well.
A lot of people have said that Owen Beck would be the ideal number three center for many NHL teams. That's why he was coveted in the draft as well. The thing is, though, if you have Nick Suzuki as your number one, Kirby Doc as your number two, Owen Beck as your number three, and maybe a Jake Evans as your number four, is that good enough to actually get somewhere? Or is that only good enough to become that bubble team that Montreal already was with Carey Price for so many years?
That is a fantastic question. And it's honestly something that I've been looking at over the last year and thinking, like, is this team built in a way that if you get enough high-end talent on the wing, the center line is good enough to carry you through because of depth more than high-end talent? And I'm not sure. I think we fall into a trap often in hockey where we talk about this team did it this way, and like these few teams that won Stanley Cups have these things in common, and we decide, well, therefore it can't be done another way. Right. And I think teams do that a lot of times when they're copying whoever won the last championship, right? Like we've seen it all the way back to like 2007 when the Ducks won, and then a bunch of teams were like, okay, we got to beat everyone else up. And then that didn't really work. So they shifted to like the Chicago Blackhawks being this crazy possession team that took a lot of chances offensively at the same time. And then that worked really well, but then the LA Kings came out and they were going to beat you up again, but also they never ever let you touch the puck, and everything is low danger. They shoot only from the perimeter and recover all the pucks. You can never penetrate the front of their net, get pucks through the slot. So it's this stifling, defensive, uncreative system that worked, and people copied that. So I think anytime you get caught in that trap, it's a bad thing, but you do need superstars somewhere to break through, to kind of find a way through teams like the Montreal Canadiens of 2021, right? Why do we criticize the Toronto Maple Leafs' big stars so much in the playoffs? It's because it's their job to take a team that's doing it through effort and defense and destroy those systems with elite play. And they haven't been able to do that. So if you don't have any of those players, it is hard to break yourself out of those situations. But is that something that limits you in one specific year, or is it going to limit you for an entire cup window? And it's hard to really predict that. If they ended up having, you know, two more goal scorers who can put the puck in the net like Caulfield, I don't think we're talking about their center line too much. But I do think for this to work, Owen Beck or whoever slots in at that third center needs to be just a share, like a very slight amount less good than Kirby Doc, right? It's just like Kirby Doc needs to get right to where Nick Suzuki is. Nick Suzuki needs to get a little bit higher, and everything has to be like the drop down has to be very slight between the first three, and then your fourth line can be a little bit bigger of a drop. But I think the Canadiens essentially need to have three very good scoring lines if they don't have a superstar center, and that might be tough to build and develop. I'm not sure. I think they're trying to do something that hasn't been done, frankly.
Yeah, I think you're also forgetting that Lane Hutson is going to put up 100 points from the blue line. So.
That's also true, right? Like Lane Hutson could be that superstar that changes things in a different way. The Cale Makar that the straw that stirs the drink, right? It could open up new avenues for goal scoring for every other player. Like, would Nathan MacKinnon be who he is right now without Cale Makar? I think you could argue that he wasn't this good before Cale Makar made the NHL.
We'll take a quick break to listen to some of our sponsors. Please lower the volume. We don't want you to drive off a cliff, to fall on the tracks from a platform in London Underground, or anything else that might disrupt your day. and we'll be going right back into our conversations with Andrew Berkshire.
And then we see it in Europe in hockey a little bit, where, I mean, jokingly we say we play four lines, but there have been championship teams in Europe that has played with these very small drops between first, second, third, and fourth line even. Where, and then you have the other school that drives this maybe more North American hockey, where it's two really good lines and two defensive-minded lines. So yeah, if you can take one and apply it and see that it's worked somewhere, and do it your own version, because that is how you're going to get better. Looking at back to Dach and everything, what do you think is realistic expectations to have on Kirby Dach this season? Saying he will be injury-free then.
This is the first thing I was going to say is you hope no injuries, right? Because the Canadians have dealt with their fair share and times five the last couple of years here. I think for Kirby Dach, it really depends on team growth. Right, because you want to see production. Like, for me, more than anything, I want to see a consistent repeat of the positive inputs from last year. I want to see him continue to be really strong defensively. I want to see him continue to work well with a variety of different line mates if necessary. I want to see him continue to look really strong on the power play, especially those 4-on-3s that I thought he was really dominant on last year. Still play well in overtime, all those things to still be present with a slight uptick in production. But a lot of that's going to depend on, can the Canadians get a functioning power play? I don't think that power
play... Well, we said that for the last, 13 years?
That's right, maybe longer. And that's why I think it's not on the players, right? Organizationally, the philosophy on the power play needs to change. Whether that's hiring somebody else in to fix it, I don't know. But something needs to change there. They have enough good players to make a functioning power play. Like, it really should not be this painful. I know they don't have like a true power play quarterback, but still.
Well, he's coming up. We know that. It's going to
be. Yeah, Chris Weidman is coming up.
but there you go.
But yeah. I think it's also like we've seen Washington has built with a very, very good passer. They have built a power play on getting the puck to Ovechkin that is not moving 2 centimeters from the dot in the circle, really. And arguably one of the best shots in the world. And Cole Caulfield is not far behind.
Yeah, and also you have Nick on the other side, who's really good at just slotting in, and you don't know if it's going to pass or shoot, and he has a really, really quick wrister. So, and then if Monahan continues to play well and actually play, he did some stuff as well. So
he's a great net front presence.
Exactly.
Looking though, you mentioned lines and line mates, Andrew. Would you put Slav with Dach this year? Would you move him up that fast, Slavkovsky, or would you maybe do you think those two big guys would work?
What I had it, I kind of like wrote down just as an exercise for myself how I would start the season, and I don't think this is going to be how the Canadians start the season. Predicting doesn't mean that you're smart enough or would work in that situation, but I think this is not going to be how they started, just because there are things that they value that I don't. So I would start Harvey Pinard on the top line with Suzuki and Caulfield. I really liked how he played last year in a really tough role with Suzuki. Without Caulfield, against top lines, they actually had positive differentials. So that's good. Add Caulfield to that. Rip it up. Second line, they said they were going to start a new hook on the second line. So I'd put him with Dach and Anderson. Just reward Anderson to start out the season for the progress he made last year. And then keep some pressure off Slavkovsky, put him with Hoffman and Monahan. He commented last year that Monahan slowed down the game for him a little bit. And I think that is important for Slav's continued adjustment to North American ice. I know that this is something that people dog on all the time, but it is a big adjustment for a player who's also like finding his sea legs. He's got that big player, lanky, like baby deer stuff going on sometimes. And maybe he won't this year because he's another year stronger. I know he's done some crazy training over the summer, but I think he needs someone to play the game at a little bit of a slower pace. And Monahan does that. Hoffman does that. And Hoffman's improvement last year, I think, gets really a lot less play than it should. He went from a guy who could not be trusted at any point at 5-on-5 defensively to a guy who was actually chipping in defensively. And yeah, his offense is not great compared to what it used to be, but he can still fire that laser shot once in a while. He's just not a point man on the power play. And I need to stop experimenting with that. And then the fourth line is whoever, right? Gallagher obviously is there, but Gallagher is an X factor. He might move other guys down the lineup, or he might not be playing at all with all the injuries he always seems to have.
Interesting take at this point when we're recording this. We've had an article out about Slavkovsky's summer training with the coach, and he pinpoints that, you know, small changes at this level makes huge impact. And it seems like Slavkovsky's 8 months in Europe with, you know, out of the limelight a little bit has made a really good impact on him. I'm looking forward to him. I'm also looking forward to that. I wouldn't be surprised to have Newhook on the first line with Suzuki and Caulfield.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Yeah,
I can see that happening. And then obviously Anderson, Dak, and maybe Slavkovsky for a giant line really, if Slavkovsky can keep up there, you know, that could be something that really manhandles the opposing team quite well.
Well, I think I expect Slavkovsky to be on the second line by the end of the season. I think that he's a lot better than what people want to believe after last year. I think people ignored a lot of the progress that he made with the Canadiens coaching staff, with their skills staff, and obviously this summer. He, you know, people talk about this current year, 2023, being a great draft at the top. And I think that it's obviously a small sample size, but we talk a lot about like the World Championship, stuff like that, and people overrating Slavkovsky because of his performance there. But look what he did there compared to some of the top draft picks this year. He outproduced Carlson. He outproduced Fantilli. Yes, in a bigger role for sure. But he's also, they weren't playing against Canada, you know, and Sweden. Every team that Slovakia faces is a team that's, for the most part, better than them. They're in that like lower end of the top tier teams. So it's a tougher challenge as well to play on those top lines. So I think Slavkovsky has a lot higher of a potential than people believe.
Slavkovsky also played against Russia.
There you go, for sure. Like, I think that he's going to end up there. I think if the Canadians really want to, you know, put a line out there once in a while that can cause some ruckus and that's hard to match up against, they could put Doc Monahan and Slavkovsky together, or Doc Anderson and Slavkovsky, throw those guys out there and just tell them to forecheck. You're going to make a lot of teams upset.
Well, they're there to win, not to appreciate other teams.
Well,
it's also so easy to forget, like, when you're coming into the league as an 18-year-old, how many players actually make a huge impact from the get-go. Yeah. I mean, Connor McDavid is obviously one, Austin Matthews is another, but it's difficult for a lot of players. We've seen players like Lafreniere struggle from the start. We really saw Shane Wright struggle from the start last year. I mean, out of all of the players who were drafted last year, we have only 5 players who have played in the NHL at least one game. It's Marco Kasper, he played 1 game. David Jiříček played 4. Shane Wright played 8. Owen Beck played 1. And Juraj Slavkovský played 39. So
And Kasper played his at the end of the season when everything was done and decided anyway.
Yeah, of course. But right. It's only 5 players out of how many were drafted in total. It was 225.
Yeah.
So just the fact that he was actually there and competing and actually making a few points and creating something and knowing what to expect for this season, I mean, that's going to be huge for him.
100%.
And also having, you know, he had the World Juniors for 2 games, or what was it last year? He had the World Championships, the draft with all that encounters with, you know, he didn't have a summer break. I actually think that this 8 months that he was left out of hockey or playing hockey, practicing hockey is another thing, but playing hockey was really, really good for him. His recovery, going to a specialist coach shows that you want to learn, you want to
improve. Yeah, the attitude is great.
Going back to Dach, Do you want to give a sort of, you said the opening night, but what can we expect maybe from, you know, end of the season point-wise? Do you think he will improve? What was it, a .55 point per game average? And
yeah, I mean, I think his production will improve, but I think a lot of that improvement is going to be down to team improvement more than, like, the Doc at the end of the season, or the end of his season, was a very, very good player. And if he's just that player for all of next season, he'll score more points. You know, like, he doesn't necessarily have to take a step. So if he takes a step further than that, you know, he could easily be a 60-point guy. Like, it wouldn't surprise me at all, especially if he's getting top line minutes in the power play unit. If the power play is somewhat efficient, even like 20th in the league instead of like 31st or whatever they were.
I thought we were 35th of 32 teams.
It felt like it most nights, didn't it, Patrick?
Yeah, it felt like that. As I said, since I was starting out hanging out with you guys at Eyes on the Prize in, what was it, 2012, I think, or something like that. But you've been listening to Absent Minded, top 25, under 25. We have a fantastic guest. You were the one that actually plugged me into Eyes on the Prize, the core at least. Andrew Berkshire of Game Over Montreal. You know, you get the game show directly after the game with Andrew, and then you got bottom 6 minutes with Matt. It's PG18 with Matt, so be prepared for that when you wake up in the morning. Thank you so much for joining us, Andrew. It's a pleasure having you on, and looking forward to some more collaboration down the line.
No, it's really nice. Honestly, it's the first time I've talked hockey since June, so it's been nice to chat with you both.
Anton, thank you.